AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
And you're right, it's simply adding infrastructure to our gas stations so that they can carry better burning fuel.
Welcome to AgBioScience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinovis CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to AgBioScience. 2025 is poised to be an interesting year for AgBioScience. Venture capital inflows from 2023 to 2024 are roughly flat, according to CropLife. The production cost of corn and beans remains roughly in line or slightly below market price. And the turbulence around global trade and what tariffs can mean leave an uncertain operating market for what's ahead in AgBioScience. Here to help us make some sense of what's ahead and where opportunity exists for those bold enough to seize it is Eric Pfeiffer, president of Hoosier Ag Today and Michigan Ag Today. Eric, it is a delight to have you with us on AgBioScience.
Mitch, really glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
We're going to have a lot of fun, Eric. You have an incredible background, spent a couple decades now spending time with producers in the field, understanding the challenges they face. And I think it's a great place for us to start is, what are you hearing? We're getting ready to go into the 2025 growing season. You've been to some ag shows. You spent some time at the State House. Give us an idea. What's on the mind of producers, given this operating environment that is turbulent and uncertain at best?
Farmers right now, I don't think that it's changed much over the years because people have this image of farmers in their mind of kind of ho-hum, but really most of the producers that you and I talk to, they're overall very optimistic people just by nature. Every year it's a new year and they get this opportunity each year to put something new in the ground and we get to start over. They're just very optimistic by nature, but that doesn't take away the fact of the things that you just mentioned. We're still sitting at, you know, just a couple of weeks ago was the Purdue Top Farmer Conference, and they talked about the challenges that they're going to have this year in turning a profit. I think the break-even price on corn this year is going to be $4.90. That's what they're projecting right now. We're right there hovering around that $4.90 mark with grain prices. It's going to be another tough year. Farmers are aware of that, and they're trying to figure out what can we do, how can we diversify, what can we do to get up over that mark, and they're aware it's going to be another tough year, and they're trying to figure out where can we cut, where can we find the difference to get us up over that. So while there's always optimism, just that natural optimism that farmers have, they know it's going to be yet another challenging year ahead.
I think you look at producers at large, and they are optimists. They're also very pragmatic and knowing that control the controllables, and you look at every single one of them are entrepreneurs by definition, making big bets, highly capital intensive business. One of the capital areas that I have a love for is anything with a motor and some tires. We call them tractors. And you look at tractors as an example. Large tractor sales, combine sales, a tough environment heading into this growing season. Q4 finished really tough for most of the OEMs. What are you hearing? I mean, you were just at a farm machinery show not that long ago. What are you hearing from producers and those that serve them on how they're thinking about making investments? How are they making capital expenditure commitments heading into this uncertain season?
It's light. A lot of it comes back to the financial conditions and where we've been for the past several years now. It's been light. And for those that can still make those purchases, some that still have some of the cash on hand, they're the lucky ones and they can go in and make those. It's one of those things where when you can make some of those decisions and you can make some of those purchases in the down years, that's kind of the time to do it. They're the ones in the really good position to be able to do that. Others just simply can't, and that's hard. And it's taken a toll on some of these manufacturers and the farmers. It's just not a great time. You look at it, you know, going back to Purdue, we're so blessed to have Purdue in this ag community here in Indiana. And you look at the ag economy barometer that Dr. Mentert there at Purdue and the Center for Commercial Agriculture that they put together. The study keeps saying month after month after month, now's not a good time. Now's not a good time for these big capital expenditures. And that's holding true across the entire farm community that I talk to. You talk about the farm shows. In recent years, those have been kind of falling off. We used to have one.
Right.
We used to have one that That's we would right. host at Grand Park here in Indiana. We had to shut that down. Those are slowing down in large part because of attendance, because of people not being able to make some of those expenditures right now. The hope is that that economy comes back. Oftentimes, it's a cyclical thing. We're hopeful that this is just a downturn for now and that it comes back and that we can get back in the upturn here very soon.
When you're talking with producers, and especially in this season, everybody's looking back on what happened in growing season 24, making plans for 25. There's always some tax planning that happens in Q4 and some expenditures that get made. And again, sort of tax planning, tax execution. But the OPEX, the operating expenses headed into 2025, any areas of investment that you're seeing, as you're talking with folks, you know, we've seen a rise in biologicals as an example. We've seen diversification, to your point earlier, on how do we drive market premium. Maybe I'm going to grow high oleic soybeans as an example. Anything, any trends that you're noticing from these conversations of maybe some operating changes that could drive some incremental revenue here in 25?
It is those things that they're hearing from people that work. That's what everyone's asking. What works? You mentioned biologicals. This has been a huge conversation, Mitch, and shameless plug here for our podcast
Good,
network.
Do it.
The Hoosier Ag Today podcast network that the Ag Bioscience podcast is a part of, and we're
Indeed
very happy
is.
To have you on there. I've been doing a podcast now with Dr. Sean Castile and Dr. Dan Quinn, the Purdue Extension soybean and corn specialist for some years now, and this has been a hot topic. Do biologicals work? That's the question that they continually get every event that they go to. Farmers are wanting to know, do they work? Where do they work? How often do they work? What kind of ROI am I getting? And the answers that keep coming back are, well, yeah, but. And that's where we come in at Hoosier Ag Today. The biologicals work, but the biological companies need to work with us because they work in certain areas. They work in certain conditions. They need to work with us to let the farmers know that and where exactly they're going to work so that the farmers can get the best ROI out of them. And that's where farmers are trying to figure all of that out on their own. There are so many biologicals out there. I can't even remember the number. This is just
an enormous number.
Oh, it's a huge number. And that's what we're trying to get to because all of these biological companies are coming to us to advertise. It's like, holy cow, where, you know, can we even fit them all on the air? Those are some of the investments that are being made. We need to make sure that farmers are putting them in the right place at the right time to make them work. Because I don't think that the biological companies don't want them being put in the wrong places at
Correct.
The wrong times because then it's, you know, it's a bad name for them at the end of the day. So those are the investments being made. We need to make sure that farmers are making the right investments. But I think biological companies would agree.
We'll take a look at what's ahead for production ag and what it means for innovators in the operating environment. We'll do it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of health care has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. Talking with Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today president of Michigan Ag Today. Eric, we've talked a lot about this operating environment and the economic operating environment. Let's get into some policy operating environment. General Assembly here in Indiana in session. You've spent some time over there. Lots of focus this year on many ag topics critical to rural Indiana. I think this we could abstract this across much of the Midwest, much of the agricultural community. Give us a sense for what is happening here in Indiana. What are some of those issues? And what are you hearing from producers? And for those that serve producers, what's critical this General Assembly?
We could spend an hour here, Mitch, for talking about all of the agriculture bills that are at the State House. But in a nutshell, putting the actual legislation aside, let me ask you, Mitch, are you a country music fan?
Oh, my gosh. 90s country. Count me in.
Okay. Well, I would have taken you for a hair band guy. I think, going back, I bet you were the lead singer of a hair band in high school.
Well, you can tell.
Absolutely. There are two recent songs that were on the country charts, and one from Dustin Johnson and one from Justin Moore. And they're both about, I'm not going to sell my farm dirt cheap and you know, this is my dirt and people coming to my door and I'm not going to sell my farm. I'm waiting for the country hit that's actually more of the reality of the land developers come to my door, they hand me the big check, and oh, I don't have kids that really want to get into farming, so I'm going to take the check, this is my retirement, and I'm going to go buy my place in Florida or wherever is warm, and I'm not going to come back and check on the farm in a couple of years because it'll hurt too much to see the hundreds of houses that they've built on where I used to grow my corn. That's the issue. So that is what we're actually dealing with. And now we're trying to get some legislation here behind all of it. This is where we're talking about property tax reform.
Absolutely.
This is the big thing. If you watched any of the gubernatorial debates, especially throughout the Republican primary, and now we're trying to get into it, SB 1, Senate Bill 1, that's talking about property tax reform. But even now, when you look at State Representative Kendall Culp, who's put forward a bill that's talking about how they assess farmland value and trying to recalculate that formula. And it'd be too difficult for me to try to explain all the formulas and everything here. But ultimately, for farmers, 63%, that's what the assessed farmland value has gone up in just the past 3 years. That's the burden that farmers have taken on in the way of taxes in just 3 years. How are we supposed to hand down farms to the next generation when that's the burden being placed on this generation of farmers? That burden has to come off. That burden has to come off of this existing generation if we want to hand it down to the next one. I know that Representative Culp has another bill out there that's talking about a tax credit to retiring farmers to basically do something with the next generation of farmers, to sell it to a younger farmer that wants to get it in. I don't know all the details on that bill. I'm looking forward to chatting with him about that one. But there are a number of bills that are looking toward that. So if you want to talk about the legislation, we can get into that all day, but that's the root issue. And that's what we need to figure out. And that's where policy can help. I really hope that we get down to the issue and that's what we can solve.
I think that's the most critical as we think about this operating environment for ag. When we look at ag bioscience, we so often focus on production agriculture because it is the cornerstone. It's where plant science and crop protection go to work. It's where ag tech goes to work. It's where food is made. It's where animal health is ultimately connected to. All of those are connected to production ag. And when you look at this operating environment of policy, what we're seeing make its way through state houses, let's be really clear, through Capitol Hill as well, all of these have a connection back into things that every person on this planet is connected to, and it's food. And so I think part of the challenge that I think we both share is, how do you make this relatable? How do you make this something where people can understand that, hey, farmland AV, farmland assessed value, is actually important to you, even if you are a tech entrepreneur? Even if you are someone who's working on a new biological, these are all connected.
That's the other part of this. You know, we're talking about this impacting rural communities. How do we shift that tax burden? What needs to be cut? Everyone I talk to about economic development, these are big in those circles as well. How does this impact an organization like yours, like Agrinovis, in helping to bring some of these ag tech companies in? Because we need to make sure that as part of all of this, that Indiana's business-friendly reputation, believe me, we have. Everyone I talk to we have that reputation, and Agrinovis is a huge part of that reputation. We have it, and we need to maintain it so that these ag tech companies continue to come in. We have to maintain that throughout all of this as well. So it's a double-edged sword here that we have to maintain and figure out. And you're right. How do we get this to the average consumer and the average system that's not necessarily related to the farm gate, their distance from the farm aspects? It can sometimes be a hard sell. And that leads me to another bill that we're following closely with biofuel tax credits.
This is an opportunity.
It's a huge opportunity. There are a couple of companion bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, that we're following closely. The Indiana corn and soybean folks are behind this all the way. It would be a $15 million investment, but we're talking about returns back to farmers of $117 million annually. We could add $104 million to Indiana's annual GDP. We're talking about $11 million plus in savings to Indiana's consumers and fuel costs. I mean, I would encourage folks to go check these things out. HoosierAgToday.com. We've got articles about all of these bills that we're following in the ag space. There are so many things that we can do on these ag bills that aren't just related to farmers. They're unintended consequences that are going to be huge wins for Indiana consumers as well.
I love biofuels. I love talking about biofuels because it is the great equalizer, right? Today, roughly 10% of every gallon of gas we pump into our trucks or cars are corn. And when you look at Indiana, when you look at where our corn goes, 45-ish percent of the corn grown here in Indiana goes to ethanol. And you begin to look at what are those opportunities to create when a farmer delivers their grain to an ethanol plant, there's typically a premium. What are their ways? When we think economic development at large, you mentioned economic development earlier. Economic development can be that. Economic development will look different. Let's look here in Indiana. It may look different in Tipton County than it does in Tippecanoe County. That's okay. What I think we have to, we, you and I and all of us here in Ag Bioscience have to link arms and identify that what those things are, what drives growth to Tipton County versus a Tippecanoe County versus Versailles and Vigo County, right? Like all the different places in this state, it's going to look different. How do we create the infrastructure? How do we create the connectivity that makes that reality possible and delivers value back to the farm gate and to those communities?
That bill, by the way, also supports another 677 Indiana jobs as well. And you're right. It's simply adding infrastructure to our gas stations so that they can carry better burning fuel. If you're an environmentalist, this is a win for you too. So who is this bill bad for? That's why I say, take a look at this stuff. This is a win-win-win. It's just, this is a tight budget year.
For sure.
Can we get it through next, right?
We're in a biennium. I think this year is tight. I think next year, all forecasts show that could be even tighter. Okay, we spent time on the state. We have to spend time on feds before we wrap up. New Congress. We have a new administration. I mentioned trade up front. Lots of turbulence and questions around what will tariffs be? Will tariffs come into fruition? What will that mean for ag trade? A big component of ag bioscience market is a global market. Give us a sense what you're hearing from producers and from politicians on Capitol Hill of what does this look like here in the next, call it 6 to 12 months?
That's a great question.
Crystal ball.
Boy, if I had the answers, I don't know that I'd be here, Mitch. No one knows. It really is the big question mark in the room. I think there's only one person that does know, and that's President Trump. This is the big question. I think that there are more questions now about this than there were during his first administration. It's tough to say. There are a number of questions about this. I think that before, during the first administration, it was all about China, right? And once we got the phase one trade deal, okay, it's like, all right, when's phase two? Well, now we just don't know. Now we're talking about 10% tariffs on China, but we're also talking about potentially 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada, our largest trading partners to the north and to the south.
I mean, correct.
But we're also talking about issues that he wants to take on with the Panama Canal. That is a huge, huge issue if we get into this, because that's where a number of our exports go. We're talking about trade wars on just about every front now that we would be taking on all at the same time. So it's just tough to say right now. And when I talk to farmers about this, it's, yes, we want to take on China. We want them to trade fairly. We want them to do this right. Yes, we wanted Mexico to get rid of this silly ban on GMO corn. We got that figured out, by the way. That is taken care of. We got that sorted. But now what? Like, we just don't know where this is going to go next. Now we're just looking for answers. And again, I think there's only one person that can really provide those. So we just wait. And we wait to see where this goes. As far as legislation on the federal level, Mitch, it remains this farm bill. This farm bill, we still don't have the answers we need on that. And we need them sooner rather than later so that farmers can start making plans. That's the biggest thing. They need answers on this farm bill so that they can make plans for the future. And again, I think that that's going to get pushed out. If I had to look into my crystal ball on that, that's going to get pushed out. That's not a priority right now. We have Republicans in the House, the Senate, and the White House. I think they're confident that it will get done at some point. It'll get done to their liking, but they're going to tackle other priorities first, the border, immigration. They're going to tackle those things first before they even start thinking about a farm bill. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what they're going to focus on, and it's just going to get pushed out.
Eric, we have time for one more question. I'd love to have you back sometime. We need to talk immigration as well and labor as it relates to agriculture, because there's a whole nother chapter of conversation around uncertainty and challenge that's there. There's probably some opportunity there as well as we think about it. As you look to 2025, we've talked about a lot of things that create headwinds or turbulence. We also can't argue with there's some tailwinds here as well, right? There are incredible producers. We live in an era where we're seeing amazing amounts of innovation, scientific innovation, technological innovation that's really buoying this industry, despite all the things we've talked about. As you look at 25, what do you see? What's driving optimism for you and for those you're talking with heading into this growing season?
Oddly enough, and this is going to sound weird based on what I just said, it might be a new administration. And that's not necessarily just, you know, me showing any type of political bias. We talked about a cyclical economy. For whatever reason, when President Trump was in office, this ag economy was seemingly stronger. And I guess, again, going back to the Purdue Ag Economy Barometer, once the election was complete, it showed that farmer optimism kind of went through the roof through that. And that's a study of 400 ag producers across the country. And that's been consistent since the election happened. I think that as we look at this, we need the ag economy to turn around, or even the sense of the ag economy to turn around, for some of these other things to start to turn around. If we can avoid some of these trade wars, or even if we win some of these trade wars, we can start getting some of these other things taken care of. If it goes the other way, it's bad news. But I think that that's where some of the farmer optimism comes from. My optimism comes from the farmer and the work that they put in. So that's where my optimism comes from, is from the farmer. And if the farmer is getting their optimism from that direction, I'll take it.
Sage advice. Eric Pfeiffer, president of Hoosier Ag Today, president of Michigan Ag Today. Elated you've spent time with us. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Mitch. And I appreciate all that you and Agrinovis do for the state. And
thank you.
Love what you guys do. Big fan. Field Atlas program. You know, I love what you guys do. This has been a pleasure.
Love it. Blessed with a great team. And thank you so much for joining us on Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget, while you're online, check us out, agrinovisindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovis team, I'm Mitch Frazier, saying thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, hosted by Mitch Frazier, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovisindiana.com.